listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Hello. I'm not sure I know any farmers who would consider they've got much in common with the fashion industry, but to my mind, both industries have several things in common. Putting the basic facts of the significant value to the economy and the numbers of people employed aside, planning is a common virtue. This year's planting and breeding decisions will determine next season's fashions, or more accurately, the crops and livestock on the farms in the year ahead. Good old-fashioned weather is another factor to consider. And to continue the analogy, is it barbecue time with t-shirts and shorts, salads and soft fruits? Or have we got April showers in August, meaning the sales of steaks and pork sausages falter and out come the jumpers again? Where's this going? Well, thinking about the near future, the next 12 to 18 months could not be more important because of the challenges and the agriculture sector faces, resulting from, of course, things like coronavirus, changes in shoppers' behaviour, Britain's exit from the EU, and changes to government policy. I'm John Bates, and in this podcast, we hear the latest AHDB Agri-Market Outlook information, the fourth annual analysis, which looks forward, sector by sector, and explores the future using the most up-to-date intelligence, combining feedback and insight from experts across the agri-food industry. Here to tell us all about the analysis, as far as the livestock sector is concerned, is Dairy and Livestock Head of Market Specialist Chris Gooderham and Duncan Wyatt, Red Meat Lead Analyst, both from AHDB. Chris, if I may, I'll start with you. Just give us some context around 2020. Has it been good, bad, ugly? What's the data telling you?
Hi, John. It's been a very interesting 2020 so far. If you think at the start of the year, we were obviously concerned about Brexit and what our trade relationship might look like. We then had some pretty horrendous weather conditions, be it extreme wet to drought conditions, and then obviously got hit with the coronavirus challenges and how that's impacted on food service. And I think really what we've seen over the last few months has been how sectors and how our industries have been able to cope with that transition of an increase in demand through retail and a complete stoppage of eating out of home, or certainly a massive reduction in food service. And it's how we've coped with that that's kind of set the scene for 2020 so far.
Now, you made a reference there to the fact that a huge area of the economy stopped due to coronavirus pandemic, the food service industry. Has that made the preparation of this analysis more complicated?
It certainly added a new element of challenge, because what we will do with this analysis is we'll be looking at some of the long term trends. We'll be looking at, if we take dairy as an example, we've been looking at the trends in consumption per capita of liquid milk and the trends for things like cheese and yogurts and how they've been moving over multiple years. And obviously with the sudden lockdown and the panic buying on retail, that's thrown a lot of those trends completely out the window for a short period of time.
You reference panic buying. I was reading recently a newspaper report that was talking about some of the trading figures reported by one of the major supermarkets, talking about obviously there was a significant surge initially because of panic buying. But they're now reporting that there are fewer shopping occasions, but still greater quantities being purchased. Is that a trend that you think is going to continue?
Well, in this analysis and this outlook that we've done, we've actually laid down three scenarios, and these kind of talk about how quickly things might return and what they might return to. So they go from the kind of the base scenario through to some pretty pessimistic ones about the fact that certainly eating out of home would not return for many months. But the trends that we're seeing at retail level, you know, consumers are buying in different ways. If you take the increase that we've seen in home delivery, that changes the focus significantly from a from a processor perspective and from a retailer perspective. You know, how do you launch a new product if you can't highlight it on a shelf? You know, it's very easy when you're online shopping to just add things into the basket that, that you always buy. So it certainly brings different challenges. And I think quite a few of those changes that we've seen in consumer behavior are likely to be longer lived. Now, part of that will be the fact that we've kind of suddenly got a lot of time back in our lives. And that will change, obviously, as people go back to work and they're traveling around more. And obviously the financial impact that, that a number of people will suffer from this pandemic. And that's all going to change our buying habits in the future.
What would be the biggest future challenge as far as the livestock industry is concerned, and why?
I think there are a number of areas that we need to think about. Obviously, the retail versus food service piece and how that unravels is one of them. But if we're looking longer term, we've got Brexit still coming up. We don't know what the trading environment is going to look like. We've still got the environmental challenges, and whether that's consumers' buying habits or whether that's actually the extreme weather conditions and how we cope with periods of very wet weather followed by periods of very dry weather. You know, this is all very, very different to how we would have expected our weather conditions to have been a few years ago. So I think those are some of the biggest challenges, and I think one of the key things for me is how flexible as a business and resilient we are going forward.
You've had a careful look at dairy, which of course is a sector which, as you've already referenced, has had some pretty difficult trading during coronavirus. Does this analysis make the appearance of a brighter future?
So I think the underlying trend for dairy is there's still a global increase in consumption of dairy, and that's driven from two things. That's driven from an increase in the population, global population, and it's driven by an increase of consumption per capita. So the future for dairy globally is strong. We kind of overlay that with a few challenges. So the challenge of what does our trading relationship look like with the world when we come out of Brexit? What do consumers' buying habits look like as we unravel from lockdown, and the financial implications on people? You know, how is that going to impact on them? I think one of the trends, the long-term trends that we have been seeing, is this kind of move in the way that consumers consume their dairy. Certainly in the UK, we've seen consumers move more towards products like cheese and yogurt, and not so much on the liquid side. So if you look at the kind of the weighting of consumption, it's very much moving towards the manufactured products. And we need to be an industry that's ready for that. We have focused quite a few years in the UK on liquid consumption. And if we're going to take the benefits from whatever this trading platform looks like, that's more likely to be in products where the water's been removed. So it's more likely to be into your cheeses and your powders. And are we ready for that world? Are we ready for the UK consumption trends moving towards more cheese and yogurts, and also for these trading opportunities?
Okay, so these are big and important questions. If listeners want to know more, where can they go to look for more information?
So the outlook, so there's a specific site on our website for the agri market outlooks, which lays all these out, both in the kind of short term and also the long term outlooks. I would also recommend that people sign up to the publication. So we put weekly publications out from each sector for on market intelligence, and that would highlight these pieces of work when they're available.
Okay, and listeners, the AHDB website is ahdb.org.uk. Duncan, if I can just turn to you now, Duncan Wyatt. You're a red meat analyst. Tell us about your job.
Hello, John. So we in our group are responsible for looking after two sectors. That's the beef and lamb sector together, and also the pork sector as well. So we're looking at production, trade, and demand as well for those three products. And that can be domestic demand or international demand in terms of exports in particular. One of the things we've noticed particularly, you know, just as Chris said, coronavirus has had a huge effect on demand in the UK. It's shifted from food service into retail. Some meats have done a little bit better than others. Pork has done particularly well. Certainly processed products have done quite well in terms of that transition across. Beef has done not too badly as well. Once we got over a few of the initial issues with carcass balance, obviously mince was a very popular product in the early days of panic buying and things like that. We've kind of addressed a lot of those issues now. And actually beef demand has done relatively well, really, in terms of making that transition across to food service. And that's been one of the surprises for me, actually, is just how well beef has done in particular. Lamb has struggled a little bit, and that's possibly because of the demographic of lamb consumers as well. But broadly speaking, you know, pork and beef have made a transition quite well across. And that's one of the things we're looking at as well. Chris has mentioned these scenarios in terms of future demand and what that's going to look like over the next 12 or 18 months or so. And of course, we're a little bit behind in terms of where we are unlocking compared to, say, some other European countries. But really, no one has done this before. And so, you know, we're trying to make a best estimate around how we think the economy might evolve. It's hard to be super optimistic, I have to say, just because, you know, every day the newspaper seems to have more information about people losing their jobs, going from furloughing to being permanently made redundant. And so coronavirus has taken a big bite out of the economy. So it's hard to be too optimistic when it comes to the demand side, but certainly the resilience of the industry and the way it was able to transition from food service to retail is certainly, I think, a reason to be optimistic in terms of making the transition back again.
So, Duncan, looking at the outlook analysis, what are the highlights for you as far as red meat is concerned? And I'm thinking, obviously, in the context of the farmers and levy payers that are listening to this.
Yeah, so Chris has mentioned it already, really. You can kind of break it down into two main sections. I think you've got coronavirus. So, you know, the important things to think about there is the demand side. If we're going to be in a sustained period of low demand for the next year or so, you know, we'll have to think about what that means for prices and therefore what that might mean for cost management on farm. This coronavirus period is going to potentially run straight into the UK leaving the EU on a more permanent basis. And obviously that's going to change our relationship with the EU in terms of tariffs and trade. And again, I'm talking about the sheep sector in particular here, which is much more vulnerable to, if it's still called a no-deal Brexit, you know, I don't know if that's the correct terminology anymore. But if we end up leaving the EU without a fully zero-for-zero free trade agreement, clearly the sheep industry is vulnerable to that as well. And then of course, leaving the EU unlocks all of these opportunities in the future for domestic agricultural policy. So we're going to have the removal of direct support, and we're going to have more emphasis on the environment in terms of how farmers get paid. And all of these things are basically going to be unlocked when we leave the EU on a more permanent basis.
You mentioned that pork did particularly well. Was that the only surprise in this analysis for you, or were there others?
Beef actually. Yeah, the transition that beef made across was a really pleasant surprise. Like I mentioned, there was a few kind of issues with carcass balance at the beginning. A lot of people were buying mince. Steak sales were slightly behind where they would like to have been. But actually, as an industry, processors and retailers kind of got together and started selling steaks in a kind of a really meaningful way, and that kind of readjusted things. And actually, that allowed the farm gate price for cattle to recover really quite sharply. What will be interesting over the next coming months will be how that UK demand side balances, in particular with imports. Irish beef production was reined in quite a lot over the coronavirus period, and now that's coming back quite strongly. It'll be interesting to see how those two things offset each other. So I think for the rest of the year, I can imagine it's really going to be a kind of a balancing act between Irish production and UK domestic demand in terms of how prices are set.
Now, perhaps a question for both of you, Duncan first. So the challenge really is to use this analysis for informing decision making out on farm. But there's a lot to consider, isn't there?
Yeah, there is a lot to consider. You know, we've got these short term effects of coronavirus and Brexit potentially, and then these longer term effects of, you know, our new trading relationship with the world and how direct support payments are going to change. So, yeah, there's a lot to take in. There's a lot to think about. And obviously, you know, levy payers out there are going to be thinking about all this really very seriously. What we've tried to do in terms of the kind of the sheer scope and scale of all the issues involved is kind of lay out the outlook in a way that makes it kind of well, we hope at least accessible. So we've kind of broken down the sectors into these shorter term outlooks, 12 to 18 months or so. Then there's a section just about farm inputs, kind of putting some context around where farm inputs have been. And then, as Chris mentioned, we've got these kind of longer views where people can spend a bit more time with the material and read it a bit more at their leisure potentially. And actually, you know, feedback has been that you can spend 10 minutes in here or much, much longer than that if you so wish. And hopefully there's something for everyone. And it's a question of kind of exploring the different sections at your own pace and to the degree of interest that you have. But you're absolutely right. There's a lot to think about, a lot to consider. And, you know, arguably, we're at a period of unprecedented change for the agricultural industry. And so, any serious business person would want to think about all of these issues, of course.
And Chris, you may want to add to that, but importantly, these documents are written in such a way that they are accessible. You actually don't have to have a degree in economics to be able to understand what's being spelled out, do you?
And that was the plan of them, John. So, I mean, I certainly would say for our main levy payers, you know, the key question is there's a lot of uncertainty coming up. And to take a good look at your own business and say, okay, well, where are the risks? Where are the risks to my business? What have we gone through? If you take the weather conditions as a good example, you know, understanding what has worked well in the past and what has not worked so well and where the risks are, whether that's on water management or whether there's an impact on the final product that you're producing. Really getting an understanding of where those risks are, I think, would be a big plus as we move into this next uncertain phase of reality.
Okay, thank you, Chris, and thank you, Duncan. So if you want to know more about this topic, please visit the AHDB website, ahdb.org.uk. There's more information there around the Agri-Market Outlook documents. Thanks again to my guests, Chris Goodrum and Duncan Wyatt. Thanks to podcast producer Miriam Druitt. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.
Visit ahdb.org.uk for all the latest news, research and information. And follow us on Twitter @theAHDB to stay up to date.